Today we're talking with Dr. Fugen Nezaroglu about depersonalization disorder. Dr. Nezaroglu is the director of the Biobehavioral Institute in Great Neck, New York. Dr. Nezaroglu, not many of us have heard of depersonalization disorder. Can you describe it?
Absolutely. Depersonalization disorder, by the way, has been around since the 1800s. The term was coined by Ludvar Gudovich. And even though it's been around for so long, most of us have not heard about it, and there's very little research that's done on it. Depersonalization disorder is a persistent and recurrent experiences of feeling detached from one's body and mind, as if the person was an observer of oneself. So you're outside of your body, looking onto yourself, and observing everything you do, think, and feel.
Is it a common disorder?
It is pretty common. It's just that because most of us as clinicians have not heard about it, or the consumers have not heard about it, they're not coming in and saying, I have depersonalization disorder, and people are not actually being diagnosed as having it. But 2% of the American population suffers from depersonalization disorder.
What is its relationship to anxiety disorders?
DPD, or depersonalization disorder, is very much related to anxiety disorders because the individual, in feeling detached, feeling numb, feeling unreal, becomes extremely anxious over these feelings. And it's a fear-based disorder. The individual is frightened and thinks they're never going to get better, ruminates about it, and actually it's an adaptive mechanism as we would see in fear. So it's protecting the individual, incorrectly protecting them because they're perceiving threat where there is no threat, very much like panic disorder. So we could align it to panic, hypochondriasis, the ruminative aspect, more to obsessive-compulsive disorder. So it's very much related to anxiety disorders.
What are the types of DPD?
There are two types of DPD, chronic and episodic. Actually, if it's episodic, it doesn't have to be a disorder. It's actually like a psychological numbing that is evoked during times of stress. And it's very adaptive, as I said before. So most of us, for example, driving to work may dissociate, be depersonalized. We don't really know how we got there, but somehow we drove and we got to work. So that episodic or during an rape or abuse or car accident, we may be depersonalized, and it's very adaptive. But in a chronic state, it is no longer adaptive, and there's a lot of impairment in function. So chronic is what we're talking about more often, where the individual is so stressed about and anxious about the fact that they have DPD.
So the main feelings of DPD are...
The main feelings of DPD is like feeling you're on autopilot, feeling that your body and mind are not connected. You're observing yourself acting, but you're wondering, like, why am I acting this way? Is it me who's speaking right now? Is it my hands that are moving? Is it or someone else's? It's almost like an out-of-body experience, a dreamlike world that you're living in. There's mental and emotional numbing. No connection to people. Even one can look at one's child and say, you know, I'm supposed to love this child or a spouse. And the person who's suffering with DPD will say, I don't feel connected. I know what I should be feeling. And they'll act appropriately. So the person where they're not connected may not even know that they're not connected because they're doing all the right things. It's just the feeling state is not there for them. And, of course, you can imagine how disturbing that is. So they try dating, and they go, I don't know what I'm feeling. I'm not feeling anything for this person. And the other thing is, of course, the mind going blank, having difficulty retaining new information, not being able to focus, not being able to concentrate, feeling like there's nothing up there.
And so those are some symptoms. And what should a clinician look for? What do they How do they diagnose this disorder, really?
I think that many of these individuals come in saying they have anxiety and depression. So those are the two common symptoms that are reported, and I think the misdiagnosis occurs often with depression. And there are some commonalities between depression and DPD. So a good clinician, I think, should do a screening and ask them some of these kinds of questions. For example, do you feel hollow? Do you feel like you're a robot acting? Are you an actor on stage but don't have any emotions connected? You don't feel the part of your role. Some people describe it as the living dead. Do you feel like you're alive but dead at the same time? Are there any perceptual changes where things seem very far away or too close or too bright or too dull? Are you aware of differences in noise? Very much like in panic, there's an incredible awareness and of noise, hypervigilance to bodily cues, and I think most often this numbing, dreamlike state is primarily the symptoms that they will report.
What triggers DPD?
There are several triggers of DPD. Very common is marijuana usage. Individuals who may have smoked weed feel, you know, okay, this is fine, and it's kind of cool maybe looking at one's hand or being aware of their environment. But when it doesn't go away, they go to bed and they go, okay, it's still here. And the next day it's still there. And this out-of-body experience continues to be there. So marijuana usage is one of those that triggers it. Other is family dysfunctionality, where in the past of these individuals with DPD, there may have been a lot of fighting, bickering, aggression in the family. In alcoholic families, we see that kind of family dysfunctionality. So the child may have withdrawn to their room and kind of tuned out the parents. So they've learned as an adaptive mechanism to not be involved in their environment, to withdraw from their environment. Prolonged stress, war could do it, or any kind of prolonged stress. Sometimes it's a reaction to uncontrollable emotions. Someone who's had panic disorder, for example, or extreme anxiety, and they just can't tolerate it anymore. They just feel, oh, I can't cope. So it's better to be numb and not feel anything.
Let's talk about treatments a little bit. Are there specific medications that work for this?
Unfortunately, no. There's usage of SSRIs, naltrexone. Basically, the symptoms of rumination are being treated, let's say, with the SSRIs. The anxiety may be treated with a benzodiazepine like Valium or Klonopin. But unfortunately, most of these individuals do not respond. There's been some reports that Lamictal or some of the mood stabilizers may be helpful, but there's not really a lot of data supporting pharmacological approaches.
So the most effective treatment is, in your experience?
Well, I believe it's more of cognitive behavioral therapy and acceptance commitment therapy, especially acceptance commitment therapy.
And can you talk about how CBT and acceptance commitment therapy work?
Sure. With CBT, you would target, for example, doing behavioral activation for the depression. You may use interceptive cue exposure, meaning you expose the individual to their physical symptoms of TBD. And very much like you would do, again, in panic disorder. And then in those in which there's been a traumatic event, whether it's abuse or rape or family dysfunctionality, you may want to go back and really attack the trauma and do exposure to the trauma. But I think that acceptance commitment therapy is probably the most effective, although we need to really look at it in terms of research. But with acceptance and commitment therapy, what you're trying to do is get the individual to tolerate the discomfort of the depersonalization, the anxiety, the depression, that rumination, that overwhelming feeling they have. So you're trying to tell them not to be looking for solutions, but rather to walk hand in hand with this discomfort and at the same time be willing and committed to living your life according to your values, assessing their values, looking at what do... It may be values of family, friends, career, whatever it may be, helping others, and trying to really get them to do those things and spend a lot of time thinking about their values and living their life accordingly while experiencing whatever the DPD brings to them.
So are there any other modalities that work as well?
I think, again, I would go back to acceptance commitment therapy as the first strategy, probably with the other behavioral and cognitive targeting more of the particular symptoms of DPD.
Thank you, Dr. Nezaroglu. It's really wonderful to hear about something that's been longstanding as a disorder that many of us are now hearing about for the first time. This is Jean Tycho for ADAA.
Thank you.